Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Finding Jessica Lambert by Claire Ashton, narrated by Gabrielle Baker. Chapter 1. The woman's frantic movement through the window caught Anna's eye first. As her tube pulled in at the underground station, she looked up and caught her own reflection. Pale and features slack with inattention, her blonde hair draped around her face. Then the tube doors slid open. The young woman's figure, moving fast in tight black jeans and smart jacket, was distinct for a moment against the tiled walls of the underground before she barreled into the carriage, eyes panicked and gleaming white against her brown skin. "Come on," the woman rasped. She backed away from the closing doors, squeezing next to Anna, her shoulders hunched and diminishing her otherwise tall stature. "Are you all right?" Anna said. Her response was instinctive, and her stomach tightened. She thought she recognized that fear. She knew that kind of panic. The woman didn't respond and stared through the doors, anxious about someone outside, and as the tube juddered into motion, she clung to the partition. The train pulled out of the station, clacked quicker into the dark tunnels, and passengers spilled back to the section by the doors. The chatter, the attention, the bodies squashed tight in the tin can of people, sent the woman cowering further towards Anna. "I need to get out of here," she breathed, seemingly to herself. "I need to get out." Anna modulated her voice in a way she'd perfected, so that it would soothe and imbue confidence. "Would you like me to help?" she said. Then when the woman didn't respond, "Are you having a panic attack? Was someone following you?" The woman peeked up. "Yes," she panted. The train lurched on the track around a corner, and the lights flickered at the same time a flash burst from behind the woman. When the carriage lights relit, a group of teens were giggling and playing with their phones. It seemed to send the young woman's anxiety rocketing, and she clutched her head, her long fingers buried deep into her short black hair. The woman had caught the attention of a young man across the carriage. He leered and checked her up and down. The woman was undeniably attractive. Anna had taken in that much as she'd careened into the carriage, but she was obviously stricken. What was wrong with people? This wasn't a time to ogle. A nearby businessman peering down with disdain from his newspaper was no help either. Frustrated at the response of her fellow passengers, Anna said, "It's about half a minute to the next station." And she offered a reassuring hand without thinking how the woman would react. She immediately buried herself into Anna's trench coat and began counting in short breaths. 1, 2, 3. Swaying as the tube curved around a bend. The carriage jolted and lights flickered again. Another flash bleached Anna's vision. 4, 5, 6, the woman counted louder. "Excuse me," Anna tutted in the direction of the flash. It must have been the teens again. She shuffled around the young woman's body to shield her. "Nearly there," Anna said. The throng heaved against them from behind, pushing Anna against the woman. 10, 11, 12, the woman gasped, and she buried her face into Anna's chest as the tube slowed, and almost on the count of 30, the train stopped. "Follow me," Anna said, determined and taking the woman's arm. Her companion followed, checking over her shoulder every second. "I don't usually go this way," Anna said, hesitating. "But it's quieter, and we can get you out quicker." The woman gave the slightest nod of approval, and Anna tugged her toward the inconspicuous archway and stairwell. "Count the steps if you find it comforting," Anna continued. "I tried it once upon a time. There are 70. It was one of Anna's little reassurances, one of her checks. The woman nodded and mumbled numbers as they climbed with a quick, fluid pace. A few moments later, the humidity and stuffiness of the tube, the oil and sweat that lingered in the tunnels, was diluted with the freshness of autumn night air. An archway of orange streetlight opened up ahead, and the exit emptied into a quiet side street and freedom from other passengers. "There," Anna said, "you're out," and she dropped the woman's arm. "I don't know where I am," the woman blurted, her anxiety climbing again. "I haven't got a bloody clue." "It's okay," Anna said. "Do you think you're still being followed?" "I don't know." The woman peered behind her, but who could tell what was down in the darkness of the tunnels? "I touched in with an Oyster card and ran to the nearest train. I don't even know what line that was." "You were on the northern line," Anna said, using all her training to project calm. "Where did you need to go?"
"Anywhere."
It was like the woman's body burned with stress. "It's all right," Anna murmured, and she moved closer, catching a vague smell of liquor. "Have you been drinking?"
"I'm not drunk," the woman shot back. "I don't usually drink, it's just... yes, I have," she deflated. "I wanted to calm my nerves. A quick vodka, then another. Maybe another after that. But people were looking. And this guy approached. Panicked. I was sure he followed me into the subway."
"I didn't mean for it to be judgmental," Anna said, purposefully slowing her voice. "Nothing like that at all." She carried on, seeing its calming effect on the woman. The woman's tension subsided whenever Anna talked. "I thought that perhaps we could find you a coffee to sober up."
"Oh, that's probably a good idea. But..."
"Somewhere quiet?"
"Yes, please show me. Somewhere I can rest for a while. Somewhere to hide."
The young woman trembled when Anna took her arm and led her from the side street, perhaps coming down from nervous energy. Now that Anna had time to think, she would have guessed the woman was in her 20s. Her voice, although broken with anxiety, had a deep timbre that suggested some maturity, but in moments of calm, it had the clarity of youth, and her face, though strained with distress, had a flawlessness that only the young enjoy. Anna led on with a confidence that she didn't feel, but, with her practice, projected. The young woman stood as tall as Anna now. She had a firm grip around Anna's arm. A presence, in fact, no matter how much she'd tried to hide it on the train. It seemed ludicrous somehow when she'd attempted to make herself small in Anna's chest, her thick black hair buried against Anna's shirt. But Anna knew what it was like to feel vulnerable, to have that fear, and she'd despaired that not one person was willing to help.
"Let's try Costa," she said.
"Is it quiet?"
It was Friday evening around 8 o'clock, Anna guessed.
"Perhaps," she replied, not hopeful.
"Let's take a look."
She winced as they broke into the main street with the glare of streetlights and assault of taxis, buses and bikes buffeting past.
"It's this way," she said, drawing breath.
She made a mental note, as she always did, of the shop fronts along her familiar route. First was the nail bar, where best friend Penny used to work years ago, with a dark alleyway down the side that Anna always checked, the convenience store where she bought her food, Flicks, the hairdresser's, where the trusted and much appreciated Luca kept her practical bob in perfect trim, a few doorways to offices, shadowy this time of night, but empty, Anna registered with relief. Then on the corner, a Costa, which she sometimes frequented. She pushed the cafe door open, and the wave of harsh chatter and incessant chink of crockery told them straight away that it was full.
"Jesus, it's packed," the young woman said.
"Shall we check the back?"
"No, I can't stay here," she said.
And she was already tugging Anna towards the street, more agitated than ever.
"It's Friday," Anna said. "Everywhere is probably busy. Let's check for a table."
"I can't. There are hundreds of people in there. They were already staring at me. I need a break."
The woman's expression was taut. Was it fueled by paranoia? Anna wouldn't blame her, but it was useless trying to ask above the noise of the cafe and with the woman's anxiety on the rise. It would likely cause further agitation, so Anna remained calm. Every time she'd offered help, the woman had responded well. Anna racked her brains. Pubs were a poor place to leave someone who needed sobering. Restaurants would be full with Friday night diners, coffee shops on the main street packed, those less frequented on side streets already shut. Apart from Zara's, but she'd been avoiding there. Anna sighed. There's a Turkish coffee shop not far away. It closes in an hour, so it'll be quiet. We could go there. Please, the woman breathed. They turned, and Anna reached out again for the woman's arm, but was met with the warmth of her naked hand. The sensation was vivid and intimate, the woman's soft fingers clinging around the edge of Anna's palm, and when Anna met her gaze, the young woman's eyes were wide and intense. Anna realized the woman had placed her faith in her. She was trusting Anna to take her to safety. Chapter 2. Jess's brain fizzed, her stomach clenched and her body wound tight. The sensation of the woman's fingers wrapped around her own was her only anchor, and she clung on. Is it far? Not at all, although I take a long way around, I'm afraid. The woman had the kind of voice Jess found herself trusting, like a doctor's. It had a reassuring quality, mature and confident, with quiet authority, and it held Jess's attention in her sea of anxiety. Jess had lost all sense of direction. They'd crossed several busy roads, playing Russian roulette with the zebra crossings, headlights of cars and buses flashing in every direction, horns shrieking, and all the while the woman continued her steady pace. They turned down a side road, the streetlights becoming sparse and traffic quieter, and into a narrower lane towards a small cafe with ochre awnings. There was a scattering of tables and chairs outside, each occupied by an elaborate Middle Eastern pipe. "Come inside," the woman said, and with that velvet voice Jess didn't question her. "Go to the booth at the back. I'll be with you in a moment." Jess kept her head low, sheltering her face with a hand, pretending some annoyance with her fringe, and dived into a quiet booth by a window which overlooked a dark alley. She sank onto the padded bench seat. At last, somewhere quiet, somewhere she wouldn't be watched. She'd been stupid earlier that evening, diving into a pub to steady her nerves with a quick vodka, then another, and a larger one to follow. Voices of recognition had whispered around the pub, the young clientele picking up on her presence, and her back had prickled as she became aware of all the eyes upon her. Faces from dark booths had peeked out to get a glimpse, and a man had approached. Of course, she'd started to slur, and that flamed her panic. She'd fled, and the sensation of being watched had followed her down the street into the subway. Jess too fraught to discern whether the threat was real or imaginary. Then on the tube, the group of teenagers had giggled and pointed. A young man tried to hide his urge to stare with a sideways glance. Jess had feared everyone knew who she was, but the businessman, from a different sphere, peered down at her with disdain. He probably equated her with the anonymous giggling teens who were 10 years her junior. Then a handful of others frowned in confusion, perhaps noticing that she was noticed but couldn't put a finger on why. Of all the crowd, the blonde woman paid her the most attention, but at the same time showed the least recognition of who Jess might be. It was sobering and engendered trust, and Jess, lost and breaking down, had taken the offered hand. Now at last the tension dissipated, leaving Jess's body leaden with fatigue. She propped her elbows on the cafe table and let her head drop into her hands.
Her breathing slowed and the gridlock of thoughts and cacophony in her head began to clear until there was a muffled sense of chatter and clink of cups, which she realised was simply the background noise of the cafe. Jess was finally calm enough to take in her surroundings with some kind of objectivity. Half of the cafe was dimmed, ready to close, the other loud and bright with colour. The counter was filled with trays of tiny sweets and cakes behind glass, and shelves of illustrated tins lined one side of the cafe. The walls blazed with pinks and yellows and greens, a mosaic trim around the whole room, and tinted photographs of, Jess assumed, movie stars and singers smiled with impossible glamour from the walls. The woman from the tube chatted at the counter to a young man and a middle-aged woman with long black hair streaked with grey. There was an exchange of handshakes and a kiss on the cheek from the older woman, who held Jess's companion's arm and chatted with a warm intensity. The familiarity was comforting, as was their disinterest in Jess, and she let go of another wave of tension and shuffled into her seat. The woman concluded her chat and slid into the booth seat opposite, and Jess only had a moment to take her in while she made herself comfortable. A white woman, late 30s or early 40s, she guessed. Naturally pale skin, or skin that hadn't seen the sun in a while. High cheekbones and a patrician demeanour. "You can relax here," the woman said, her voice doing as much as the setting to soothe Jess. She was well-spoken, as Jess's mum would have described. "Posh," her nan would have cackled. It was nothing like Jess's accent, or, as it had been, its corners had been rounded over the last few years, only coming out in full force on the phone to her parents, slipping into Brummie and saying "Mom" instead of "Mum," and lapsing into northern idioms with her dad, with a few choice Jamaican patois phrases from her nan's early life. Jess's accent was a blend with the flavour of many places and unmistakably British. This woman sitting a metre away perhaps existed in a completely different world. She came from a different generation and class, probably shopped in places Jess still wouldn't dream of frequenting. Jess may be one degree of separation from a millionaire on the other side of the world, but many from this fellow countrywoman. Was it possible, but for that chance meeting on the tube, neither would have known of each other's existence? That seemed incredible and exciting all at once, and the possibility filled Jess with a strange hope. Perhaps this was the only person in London who didn't have an ulterior motive and had simply offered help to a young woman called Jess. "I've ordered a dessert mezze with your coffee," the woman said. "Eat as little or as much as you like, but I thought sugar and caffeine might help steady you. I'll wait until it arrives and you feel comfortable." "Thanks," Jess said. At least she was capable of speech now. "Thank you." "You're welcome," the woman said, a picture of ease and decorum. "Do you know where you are?" Jess shook her head. She hadn't a clue. "You could use your phone to see on a map." "Oh, yes, of course. Sorry." Her brain was still sluggish. "I switched it off." She dived into her jacket pocket, squeezed the side of her mobile, and a light glowed in her hands. It took a while to start, but as soon as it displayed the home screen, notifications beeped incessantly and didn't stop for several seconds. "Jesus!" Jess dropped the phone on the table as if it burned, and the woman shuffled in her seat, perhaps disconcerted at Jess's reaction. "Are you in trouble? Who was following you?" Jess's brain began to cease again, the pressure building as soon as she began to consider her position. "I've really messed up," she muttered. She gripped her head. "I was already running away. I've let so many people down."
Her phone beeped again and buzzed on the table, then again and again. Jess snatched up the phone, reduced the volume and threw it down. It was silent but glowed on, off and on, and didn't stop. The woman remained in her seat, her voice even.
"Is there someone you can call? Someone you trust?"
Perhaps she was looking for a route out.
"No," Jess snapped. "No one." She couldn't think of a single person she wanted to see right now. Everyone she held dear, everyone who was important, would be livid with her.
"Anyone who could take you home?"
"I don't live in London. I hardly know the place," Jess blurted. "There's a hotel room with my stuff, but..." Her hands hurt. She hadn't realized she had been wringing them, but they clenched together until they ached.
Jess ceased wringing her hands and regarded the stranger across the table, one who clearly had no idea who she was. She was just a woman who'd been kind, who was probably alarmed at Jess's behavior.
"You don't know who I am," Jess said, unable to take her eyes off her companions.
"No." She was studying her too, the epitome of calm. Jess wondered out loud, incredulous.
"You don't know anything about me?"
"That's right."
The air was tense. "But you helped me."
The woman nodded. Another pause. "You were in trouble," the woman offered. "I didn't like that no one offered to help. I don't make the best Good Samaritan, I'm afraid, but I couldn't stand by and do nothing."
Jess stared at her companion, a well-dressed woman in a Burberry trench coat, an actually beautiful woman, now Jess could see clearly, with poise and consideration, and apparently no motivation for helping Jess other than her obvious need. An hour ago, the existence of such a person seemed impossible.
"Thank you," Jess said, her voice at last controlled enough to convey her sincerity.
"Really, thank you."
Now that Jess was calmer and perhaps appreciated the oddity of the situation, the woman relaxed, sinking more comfortably in her seat. The woman opened her mouth, then paused. "I'm Anna, by the way," she said, and she offered her hand.
"Jess?" She smiled, relieved at the woman's contentment. "I'm..."
The waiter approached their table.
"Just Jess," she finished.
They released each other's hands with the arrival of the drink and mezze. Anna, Jess had only just got to know her name, was shuffling as if to leave.
"Will you stay? A bit longer?"
Jess heard the rawness in her own voice, and a wave of guilty embarrassment engulfed her.
"Sorry. You've done loads already. Thank you."
Anna hesitated. The more mature woman stood perfectly poised, but for so long it made Jess smile.
"Please, you don't have to be polite," she added. "I've spoiled your Friday evening, and I'm grateful for you bringing me here."
"I do want to make sure you're safe," Anna said, her voice sober with responsibility. "What will you do? Where will you go?"
"I..." Jess's head filled with nothing. Of all the things she could have done, not one appealed or was possible without repercussions.
"I'll join you for a coffee at least, then help you on your way."
"Sorry, Yusuf?"
Anna took her seat and called towards the retreating waiter. "Could I have another coffee, please?" She turned back to Jess, a warm smile lingering on her lips, and Jess couldn't help her gaze flicking there. Full, deep pink lips, free of makeup so that you could see all the tiny delicate lines, making her mouth all the more tenderly appealing for it. Jess felt the inappropriateness of her gaze and switched her attention to her drink.
"What is this?" she said, pointing to the small gold-trimmed china mug.
"Turkish coffee," Anna replied. "I can order an Americano or something else if you prefer. You didn't seem in the best frame of mind for deliberating when we arrived. I thought a hit of this might revive you. Jess nodded and pinched the delicate china mug handle between her fingers and thumb and lifted it to her lips. If you haven't tried it before, don't glug down to the bottom. It's unfiltered. You leave the sediment. Jess took a tiny sip. Fragrant, roasted, rich coffee flowed across her tongue, and aromatic vapours filled her nose. It had a fruity tang and a bitter strength that shrunk her tongue. She couldn't help the gasp of pleasure after she swallowed. "That hits the spot," she said. "And these?" "A small selection of their baklava and shekapare." Jess recognised the flaking layers of diamond-shaped baklava and supposed the round, syrupy biscuits with an almond on the top to be the shekapare. She pinched one of the latter and nibbled. The moist, sugary dessert was a perfect follow-up to the bitter coffee, and the flavours blended in her mouth, the fragrance of lemon surfacing deliciously. "Nice," Anna murmured, a smile playing on her lips. Jess found herself gazing again. Anna had the beginning of faint lines, little semicircles at the sides of her mouth, where her smile filled her face. She had the perfect soothing voice for Jess, mellow and shaped by education, but with a hint of regional flavour. "Edinburgh," Jess said. "Sorry, you come from Edinburgh?" "Yes, I do. I didn't realise I still had an accent." "It's very faint. I have an ear for them," Jess said proudly. "One of my skills?" Jess admired Anna's profile as she turned away with a laugh, her elegant jawline displayed to full advantage and her slim neck tantalising in the shadow of dark blonde hair. "How about some more food?" Anna suggested, amusement pinching in the corner of her mouth, perhaps aware of Jess's scrutiny. Chapter 3. Anna was sitting in her favourite cafe, almost a daily haunt, a few steps away from the sanctuary of her flat, two pillars of her ordered and private life, with a woman she didn't know, who was troubled by God knows what and God knows who. The intrusion was unnerving, but at the same time Anna had to acknowledge the thrill. It was something the old Anna might have done, having the self-confidence to offer help to a stranger. It had taken a powerful dose of empathy when the woman fled into the carriage to tempt Anna, as she was now, from her shell. She'd have to tell Penny. Her best friend would be proud of her digression from her routine. In fact, Penny would be overjoyed and heartened at the progress. Too heartened, and Anna decided perhaps she wouldn't confess. The young woman sipped at her coffee and checked out of the window. She was stunning, Anna had to acknowledge. Brown eyes, Anna thought, so deep they appeared black in the dim light of the booth. Long eyelashes with a touch of makeup. A face so shapely and beautiful it was hard to think the woman hadn't been created by an artist. And yes, she was young, her brown skin smooth and made real only by a small scar on her cheek. When the woman relaxed and refrained from biting her bottom lip, her mouth curved in a generous bow. Anna wondered at who pursued her. Jessie's eyes settled on Anna for a moment, flicking away again, as if caught trying to study her. Then she smiled and lifted her cup. "This is delicious," she said. Did Jess's gaze have a tendency to linger? It was rare for anyone to really take Anna in these days. Attention may not have been uncommon, but it was unwelcome, and she'd become adept at deflecting that which came her way. But tonight it was refreshing to have someone, this person, look at her that way. That it made Anna feel warm inside was a surprise. The confidence the woman placed in her was novel too, pleasing and reassuring somehow. "Do you want to talk about what's troubling you?" Anna offered, with some of the assurance and authority she used to have. It was clear that the young woman's stress was caused by more than someone following her. Would you find it helpful?
Jess's shoulders slumped.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?